Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, everybody out there. My name's Paul, and you're listening to Waiting for Doom, the Doom Patrol podcast, which is all about the Doom Patrol, which is a comic that comes out from DC Comics. And we talk about it.
We sure do. Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarv. You can reach us, if you wish, at waitingfordoom@gmail.com or on our Waiting for Doom Facebook page or via Doug Zavish's amazing blog post, known as mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com, and all of our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com.
Podbean.com. And I'm Paul, as I said before, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks, H-I-X. And we also have a sentient show Twitter account, which is Wilfred, who's at WFDpod.
Hello, humans.
Hey, Wilfred.
Can't forget Wilfred, no.
And we are sponsored by Comicosity.
That's right, the greatest comic book website for all the news, reviews, and previews about everyone's favorite comic books. And an article that stood out to me this week is another one in the Heroes, with the emphasis on her in the word, from former guest and friend of the show. Not that she's a former friend of the show, but she's a friend of the show. She's been a guest. I'll just quit while I'm behind. Jessica Boyd has had another interview as part of her Women in Comics series, this time with Amy Chu, who's written things such as Red Sonja, a New Kiss comic book series from Dynamite Comics. I didn't even know there was another one of those. And that's
always another Kiss comic.
Yeah, can't stop that. And also the Poison Ivy Cycle of Life and Death series from DC, not too far back. And that was a really cool interview, so check that out. And even more cool stuff on comicosity.com.
Hmm.
So, Paul, how's your week been?
Yeah, it's okay. Not too much to speak of in comics. I did go and see Kong Skull Island.
Ooh, how was it?
It was fun. It's fun.
Fun?
Okay. A little bit Tropic Thunder in the soldiers.
Oh, really?
The way they're assembled. And there's a little bit of that. But pretty good. Pretty good. You can enjoy that. It's a little bit bloodthirsty, but I liked it a lot more than the Peter Jackson Kong.
Okay.
Yeah, and it is.
Speaking of bloodthirsty, did you also see Logan recently?
I have not seen Logan.
I thought you were going to see that soon. So, okay.
No. I will probably get to Logan when my daughter and me can slip away and see it. So.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
So nothing read of any real note?
I read a bit more Top 10, which I'm still going through.
Oh, cool.
Nothing super conclusive. I'm up to the bit where there's the gods, and one of the gods has been murdered, and the top 10 police show up, and one of them says, "Okay, nobody move in mysterious ways." Which I love.
Nice.
Good old Top 10.
I was getting ready.
What about you, Mike?
I've read some comics. Yes, I actually decided to go into the pile of trade paperbacks this week and actually finished one of them. Hooray, hooray! Now both of them are actually by a writer called Ed Brisson, and one of them's called The Violent, which came out from Image Comics a couple of years back, and it's about set in present day Vancouver, about an ex-con and his wife. And some unfortunate life decisions that they make and the fallout from that. And it's very kind of, it's a crime comic basically, which isn't something I usually read, but this one's really well done. And I did have the first four single issues, but I didn't have the final one. So it was easy just to get the trade and get them all. So that was good fun. And the other trade is also by Ed Brisson. And this one's called Cluster. And it's a sci-fi series. I'm about halfway through it. It's 8 issues. And it's basically in future, far-flung future Earth, prisoners get basically sent off and forced into the army. And they have to fight in this war on an alien planet. But it turns out that they're actually being used to get rid of indigenous species, so to speak. So there's a little bit of political stuff going on there as well, but there's lots of, you know, killer robots fighting, you know, the underdog anti-hero sort of thing. So that's really cool. I'm up to the fourth issue in that. So and another one where I was getting the single issues and then I missed a few and then the series ended, so it was just as easy to get the trade. So you might have me coming around to the whole concept of reading in nothing but trades, Paul. You'll be pleased.
It's a beautiful thing, Mike. It's so different.
It is. It is. But yeah, really enjoying Ed Brisson stuff. So yeah, that's really cool. Other than that, people that follow me on Twitter may be aware that I've been playing a lot of the Pathfinder Adventure card game. I was playing with a group of three characters and all three of them are now dead.
Uno.
Yeah, they died in the second last scenario of that.
Oh.
Killed off by some giant Cthulhu-esque monster. So,
is it true you have to eat the cards when they die?
No, I think that's Pokemon.
Oh, okay, good.
Sorry, Pokeyum. I will probably, you know, resist the urge to tear all the cards in half and throw it away. But I love that game. I love it, so I'll just pack it away and try and complete it all again, I don't know, in another year's time. So it's like a role-playing game that you just get worked into, except it's in card form, and I love it. But I've got another set that I'm teaching another friend how to play, and that one's more a pirate theme. So we're enjoying that at the moment. So, yeah, the sickness continues, I guess.
Pirate themed. Is he hooked?
I'll ask him that next time I see him. Hello, Mark, if you're listening. He's probably not, but anyway. Well played, sir. Well played.
Thank you.
Oh, anyway, and whilst we're enjoying a bit of wordplay, how about we continue the fun as we go and have a look at what's going down on Durrington Way?
Okie dokie. Down on Durrington Way, we can see that Jared Way has updated his Tumblr, and he's written a piece about writing the Doom Patrol, which is interesting. I think he's just trying to assure everyone that he is actually writing the Doom Patrol. But he talked about the notebooks that he's using and the pencils that he's using, which, you know, I would have thought an artist would be more interesting to talk about, you know, the notebooks and pencils they use. But anyway, but what his pattern is, he fills out these notebooks with Doom Patrol stuff, and when they're full, he, you know, he's finished. He's got two for about two issues in each one. Because he's finished the arc now, he's going through the books to see what else is in there that he didn't use that he can pull out and put into the next arc or hang on to. So,
okay.
Yeah. So he's got a ton of notes for arc one, and about half the ideas made it into the first series, and there just wasn't enough space to fit it all into six issues.
Well, that's encouraging that he is so full to the brim of ideas yet to be used.
Yeah, it's better than him saying, I only had about enough ideas for about three issues, but I'm just padding it out. But, you know, we are very much enjoying the issues when they come out. So, other than that, I can't think of too much else. The next issue is still on track for next week.
It would be insane for them to try and push issue 5 back again.
Yeah, we should keep an eye out. There will probably be preview art on one of the these websites that promote comics.
Mm-hmm. Possibly, yes.
That will probably happen on the weekend, so yes. I'll be looking for it then.
Excellent.
Yes, and that's it.
Okay. I can hear ticking. And you know what that means.
Ticking?
Yeah.
Does that mean that the doom clock is ticking?
Yes, well done. Yeah, it's time for
Nailed it.
Finally, 88 episodes in, you finally nailed it.
This is 88 episodes.
This is episode 88, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's how many podcasts you got to do to go back in time, isn't it?
Say what now?
Like you got to charge the flux capacitor and hit 88 podcasts.
I'm with you now. Anyway, look over there. It's the doom clock. Okay, so as we look upon the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that it's only been 7 weeks since issue 4 of Volume 6 came out. So, a bit of a delay, but, you know, it'll be worth the wait because issue 5 is due out next week.
Next week.
Next week, March 22nd, 2017. And it should hopefully also be the next time we see the Patrol united, victorious as a team, because we haven't seen that in about a year and 31 weeks in which they appeared in...
Hashtag the whole patrol.
Hashtag... Wow, we haven't used that one in a while. Yeah. Hashtag the whole patrol. We should use that next week. Yeah, bring it back. It's time has come again. So yeah, a year and 31 weeks ago, we saw the patrol in two different comics, All-Star Section 8, number 3, and Justice League United, number 12. And issue 5, I feel it in my waters. They're going to be back united and fighting off the Vectra and whatever else is going to come their way. I think something bad's going to happen.
Sorry, for a minute there, I was thinking the Vectra, because that's like a small sedan in Australia, isn't it?
Isn't that what the little black and red guys are called?
Yeah, they are. I know, but I've got the pictures of them fighting as a little car. I guess they do have an ambulance.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
The Vectra.
The Vectra. Oh, yeah. Fight off
the Suzuki Swift.
Oh, God. Maybe they're just really bad Transformers. They can't get out of car mode. Anyway, this past week in Doom Patrol history, going on sale for $2.99 on March 10th of 2010, with the cover date of May 2010, was Doom Patrol number 8 of Volume 5 from Keith Giffen, Matthew Clark, and Ron Randall. This issue was titled Eviction Notice, and it had the patrol face off against the pan-dimensional wrecking crew known as the Gentrifiers, as they searched Oolong Island for a certain something, which may or may not have been a certain brick. Hint, hint. We haven't covered any issues of Volume 5 just yet, but we'll get there eventually.
If you want to know more about Ron Randall, there's a podcast about his comic called Trekker, mm-hmm. and the podcast is called Trekker Talk, and they talk about Trekker.
Yes.
And that's Darren and Ruth.
Yes. Lovely people. Lovely people.
The Fighting Sullivans, we call them.
I don't think we've ever called them that, Paul.
No.
So anyway, yes, check out Trekker Talk for more about Ron Randall's work. That's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Black Canary, I'm thinking about cutting my hair. What do you think?
I don't know, Oracle. I like it the way it is. What do you think, Ashford?
Well, I'm thinking about becoming a woman.
I can see that because calling you a man is using the term rather loosely.
Be nice, Canary. He's a sensitive one.
No, I'm serious. The whole being a man thing, I'm over it.
You're over it, huh?
If I take a woman on a date or two and it goes nowhere, that is $180 down the drain, and I can't even write that off on my taxes.
$180, Ashford?
Okay, that is $37 down the drain. But that is money that could have gone to the needy, because for all intents and purposes, I could have...
Why does it have to be for all intents and purposes?
Yeah, why can't it be for the quarter of the amount?
Are you serious?
Now you know what it is like to talk to you.
Well, as I was saying, paying $147 for a meal...
Ashford!
Paying $31 for a meal for someone I will never see again is like buying a meal for a random homeless person, only slightly better conversations.
Watch it.
Actually, listen to Feathers and Foes on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Feathers and Foes.
Now, this year part of the show is the bit that we call Doomsplaining, where we explain things about the Doom Patrol. And this particular part of Doomsplaining on this particular show is about Doom Patrol Volume 2, Issue 64 and 65. So previously on Doomsplaining, in the last episode, we talked about the Grant Morrison run. And Grant Morrison run ended. It's all gone. So now a new era of Doom Patrol starts right here today. It started a while ago, but you know, we're talking about it here today. I am so smooth today, tonight. Anyway, Mike, what are you talking about first?
I am going to take us through issue 64 of volume 2 with the cover date of March 1993. It actually went on sale February 2nd of that year. with a cover price of $1.75 for 32 pages. It was edited by Tom Robert Payer, written by Rachel Pollack in her very first official Doom Patrol issue.
Woo-hoo.
And I say that because she appeared in the letters pages of quite a few issues beforehand, where she would quite often ask when she was going to get a chance to write the Doom Patrol.
Yeah, and I think she had a piece in the final issue as well about a little bit about her coming up with the next bit. Doug reprinted that on his site,
migros80.blogspot.com. So, yes, Rachel's first issue. We're still joined on pencils by Richard Case, with inks by Stan Wok, letters by Johnny Workman Jr., oh yeah, and Thomas J. Zuko? Apologies if I've mispronounced that. Thomas was on the colours.
TJ,
right, okay.
TJZ.
So yes, this issue is called Sliding in the Wreckage, Part 1, Burn in the Curse. And previously in the Doom Patrol, we saw the team save the world from the horrible Candlemaker, but the team themselves were left in tatters. Niles Calder, the chief, had been decapitated. The rest of the team had sought sanctuary on Danny the World, except for Dorothy the Eight-Faced Girl, who, with the help of a smiley-faced balloon, took off after deciding to stay here in the real world. Thank you, smiley-faced balloon. Yes. But now we see Dorothy trying to cope with this real world, having to put up with shocked whispers from other storegoers at her appearance as she tries to buy tampons at the local store. The lighting in the store suddenly turns red and Dorothy hears voices calling to her. 12 times 4, the broken pieces. Sand in your fingers. Cut glass in your face. Dead secrets call. Whisper ribbons opening home again. Dorothy turns to confront the speaker saying, I'm not coming with you. I told you. Why can't you just leave me alone? And we see the voices belong to bizarre beings with inversely tapered heads wearing robes that look African or denote voodoo origins. Dorothy suddenly calls upon one of her imaginary friends, Pretty Miss Dot, who shoots down the beings with an energy blast. Dorothy thanks Dot for her help as the two of them run out of the store, and then tells her that maybe Dot can join the Doom Patrol, because Dorothy is now the leader. What?
What?
Dorothy leading Doom Patrol? Right. In the background of all this happening, we see three young dudes starting to diss Dorothy about her appearance as she passes them by, and the three guys are suddenly startled by the appearance of snakes, dead pigs, and a dark-skinned figure adorned in snakes as well. As the men run off, they seem to indicate that they almost expected this sort of thing to happen. By the time Dorothy has made it back to her new home, a rundown apartment, Pretty Miss Dot has vanished back into the ether. Dorothy admits aloud that she's feeling lonely, and she summons into being an idolized version of Cliff Steele Robot Man, who's got flesh and hair atop his robotic headpiece, and he's dressed in a very fancy suit, with a frilly shirt and all. It's looking very dapper. Meanwhile, we're shown a conversation between Dr. Will Magnus and an apparently revived Niles Calder. What?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're having their conversation in the Chief's think tank lab. Magnus is trying to get Chief to understand how his cold detachment from humanity still leads to consequences, and that he needs to change his ways. Chief shows Magnus his think tank, describing it as magnificent and dead, just as you should have left me, Magnus. Again, what? Back at Dorothy's apartment, she's throwing a tea party for Pretty Miss Dot and the summoned idealized versions of Robot Man, Chief, and Joshua Clay. Although Joshua still seems rather catatonic. As the hostess goes to turn on a radio for some party music, there's another flash of red light outside her window, and more bizarre beings appear in the street, saying things like, partial measurements of slit teeth, we are the whisper that burns on the legs. However, this time, Dorothy thinks the beings are beautiful and runs out of her own party to get a better look at them down on the street. As she gives in to the beautiful chaos, she finds herself transported to another world with red skies and beast men. But she remembers a promise she made to herself. I can't go with you. I promise myself the real world. Angered by her denial, the bizarre beings start to attack her, and Dorothy calls on her version of the Doom Patrol to defend her. And so Fancy Robot Man, Action Chair Chief, and Spinner from Doom Force...
yeah.
appear and they protect her, allowing Dorothy to return to the real world, where her neighbours look in shock at the damaged street. Dorothy looks very embarrassed and apologizes for all the chaos. And the next morning, she's awoken by Doc Magnus at her apartment door. He believes he's figured out the cause behind the recent apparitions, and so he takes her out to lunch to have a chat about it and explains his belief that while she can willingly summon her imaginary friends to her side, there are also unfortunate side effects, unwilling aspects that also get fed by her powers and pop out of her head as well. What he can't figure out is why they appear to be a mix of African and, according to him, Greek origins. Until Dorothy explains that because she was teased about having a monkey's face as a child, she would go into her school library and read books all about Africa. That kind of explains it to Magnus, but he still can't understand why the apparitions seem more acute for several days each month, and he wonders if it has something to do with each new moon. While Dorothy tells him that the creatures want her to join them in their own world so that she'll never be alone, but she's adamant that she's going to stay here in the real world. So they finish lunch, and Magnus gives Dorothy some money to go shopping at a nearby mall, where once again she has to deal with rude whispers about her appearance from other people, and suddenly the bizarre beings reappear, saying more bizarre things like synchronized eggs, moving into taste and vision, vertical smells, underlying lick woods, swallow seeds in the morning. Right. Dorothy tries to hide from these beings in a nearby toy store, but a pair of Kelly and Bob dolls, just think trademark-free Barbie and Ken, these dolls come to life, grow to human size, and have the poor girl cornered, until just then the real Cliff Steele Robot Man appears around the corner and knocks the models to pieces. Dorothy hugs her returned friend, who agrees with her that everything is going to be fine now that they're together again, but the static that he's showing in Cliff's eyes hint that this may not be true. And back at the think tank lab, Magnus confronts Chief about, you know, possibly doing something to help the recently returned Cliff, but Niles replies that he can't possibly pay enough for his errors, and that Magnus should have left him dead without the puppet body he's been given. Niles decides to teach Magnus a lesson to correct his arrogance, and so the Chief tears his own head free from the body. But Magnus has given him. Magnus freaks out, races ahead towards a cryogenic freezer, and saves Niall's head somewhat again. As Magnus leaves the room to throw up, the head of the Chief sits there in the darkness, and snakes begin to appear in his eyes.
Ah, they're snakes.
Yes, well, that's my assumption, given the appearance of snakes elsewhere in the issue.
Yeah, snakes everywhere, aren't there?
Yeah, so what's your take on issue 64, Paul?
I don't fully understand it, Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, there are elements in here that are very reminiscent of Doom Patrol stories by Grant Morrison of the past.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the fact that the Dorothy summoning apparitions and not being able to control it, that's from the original one. There's, am I the only one seeing a real undercurrent of, about, you know, menstruation and stuff like that in there?
No, you're not alone in that. The mention that the apparitions, you know, appear to be more powerful for a few days each month. And that, you know, Dorothy was buying tampons at the store when all this craziness kicked in again. And that's kind of been touched on also by Morrison in the past as well.
Yeah. So it seems that Dorothy is involuntarily using her powers and bringing creatures into the world who attack her. It's like there's the creatures in the store which have like snake arms and weird pillow heads. And I love that she has these heroes like Dot, who she summons, is sort of like a plain blank faced helmet, but she can blast green beams and, you know, little skulls around her boots and things like that. So
I wonder if Pretty Miss Dot is kind of like an aspirational version of Dorothy herself.
Maybe.
Because Dot's quite often, well, as far as I'm aware, a shortened version of Dorothy. And Pretty Miss Dot, you know, she wears pretty clothes. She, you know, appears to have a grown woman's figure, has, you know, things like red painted lips and her hair all done up, even though we can't see her actual face. I was just thinking as I was reading this earlier that maybe that's sort of Dorothy's, a version of how she would like to appear, you know, somewhat normal, but, you know, her face being a mystery sort of thing. So, yeah.
What else I noticed in this is Thomas Zuko's colours. They're a bit more garish than we normally see.
Like, a little bit.
We usually have Danny Vozza doing the colours and things. Yeah, so there's... But, yeah, I don't really know what's going on. A lot of the things that are said, like the gibberish that comes out from, you know, the imaginary people, it's very strange. But it seems that the whole focus of this has shifted to Dorothy being the main character at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting that Robot Man reappears as well to sort of save Dorothy in the nick of time, but considering all the emotional trauma he went through to get back to Jane and back to Danny the World, it's like, oh, okay.
Mm.
That seems a bit sudden and unexplained. I'm sure it will get explained later, but can we also talk about the cover by Brian Bolland?
How
it actually,
yeah, sure.
It's one of those covers that actually reference things that actually happen in the issue.
Yeah.
It's got Robot Man fighting the Bob and Kelly dolls. It's got one of these bizarre African beings, you know, in the background. It's got the very wounded-looking Josh Clay sitting there. They're all having the tea party and Dorothy's pouring them all tea, and it's just lovely and insane.
First time Doc Magnus has been on the cover, I believe.
There he is in the bottom left corner, yeah. It's very cool. Very cool. But yes, it's an odd issue.
Yeah, it's weird how horrible everyone is to Dorothy wherever she goes.
Well, yeah, but
I mean, she's been taunted by kids before, but in this, it's adults. Like, you know, the lady with the baby who says "goddamn bitch" when she walks past and things like that. Yeah,
yeah. She never has much luck making friends. Poor Dorothy.
Yeah, and when one of the apparitions attack her, it looks like she gets bitten in the face by a snake.
Yeah, yeah. It's all, yeah, poor girl.
Can we talk about teeth nipples?
We can. What's your take on teeth nipples?
Not sexy.
I didn't go into too much detail about the appearance of the bizarre beings, but the female beings that appear and try and seduce Dorothy into their fantastical world. A lot of the women have exposed breasts, and where the nipples would be are rather, well, they're sets of teeth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. And I think, and some of the dudes have nipple teeth too.
Oh, yes. This is true.
Yeah. The Bob doll has.
He does too, yes.
Yeah.
It's all very strange.
These are things I never thought I would be discussing. All right.
All right, Paul, take us into issue 65, please.
Our story opens in a stark landscape that we're told is called the Alterations. And there are two notable landmarks. The first is a giant pig's carcass with a glowing stomach. And the second is a mountain with the face of Niles Calder, the chief.
Ooh.
And there's some nonsense words narration over this that I didn't understand, so I won't paraphrase it. Anyway, in the Doom Patrol headquarters, Doc Magnus is settling Dorothy back in. I presume it's in the Doom Patrol headquarters. They don't actually say where it is. Anyway, but his approach to settling her is patronizing her for her lack of knowledge about the mechanics of super team government relations. And he calls Dorothy naive, and she has to yell at him, "I'm not naive. Don't you call me that. I beat the Candlemaker." And Magnus apologizes, and they wander past Cliff, who's sitting there bewildered as the chief is visible on the monitor behind him. And Cliff says, "Will somebody please tell me what's going on, chief?" In what we're told is the real world, a lady called Jackie Martine is cleaning in preparation for a visit by her mother-in-law, and she pulls back a bedspread, and it reveals a vortex of letters, and we're told in the caption boxes this is the first ever message by the Book of Ice, and her hands are instantly snapped frozen as she reels back in pain, only to have most of her body shatter as she hits the floor.
Ouch.
Ooh. The effect of this message is seen around the world. People looking at art lose the ability to talk about it. A brain surgeon in San Francisco is attacked by alphabet letters that emerge from an exposed brain on his operating table. And tiny figures with alphabet letters for heads roam through the streets that have appeared directly on the patient's brain. The surgeon stumbles back, his long, delicate hands now deformed into monstrous claws that slash at his colleagues. A jagged gash in another doctor's stomach reveals dials and odd machinery. "There's no pain. What is this? What's happening to us?" she says. In a strangely, starkly decorated black and white office, a man takes a phone call. The voice he talks to is agitated as, "The old man is not pleased. He put on his beard in front of me this morning, scared the shit out of me." The voice on the phone goes on and asks, "Why hasn't this man put the Doom Patrol on the problem?" The man explains that there really isn't an official Doom Patrol at the moment. In fact, they may be part of the problem. I don't understand. Dorothy has turned her attentions to Cliff, and he keeps saying things that, but they are fragments of old conversations and actually old adventures that we remember. Mm. He's not really present there at all. He suddenly becomes lucid and apologizes. He'll get the hang of this, but then immediately he is anguished that he can look at a woman and no longer feel any desire. Dorothy leaves him, returns to her room. Feeling lonely, she decides to cheer herself up by summoning her imaginary friend, Hanger, who's like a character made out of twisted-together coat hangers. Mm. As soon as she summons him, the African woman appears in a flash of red and starts speaking mysterious verse, and instinctively Hanger blasts her into nothing, and Dorothy's also apologizes. Back in the stark landscape where the Nile's head is on the mountain and the pig carcass is there, a delegation of vaguely native African characters has come before the chief rock. They speak in vague terms of trouble within and trouble without, all centered around Dorothy. The chief rock says the simplest solution is to kill Dorothy, but the delegation says this would not solve the problem. Her imagination could live on unfettered by her body, the chief theorizes. And as they talk, snakes writhe in between the delegation and the chief rock. And the delegation tells him she is not the biggest threat, but rather it is him. Meanwhile, the snakes that we saw writhing on the ground, they also appear inside an old gypsy woman's crystal ball. And she's a fortune teller. And a Mr. Kelly is there having his fortune told and discussing his concern that certain words are disappearing from the dictionary. The fortune-telling process goes off the rails as the ball shatters. Then it frees the writhing snakes. And the word tiles that she was putting out transform into more snakes. And finally, the man and the old woman are transformed. So she turns into a completely different woman, a lot younger and blonde, in a nice suit, and he turns into himself, but he's wearing the old lady's clothes now.
Of course.
Of course. The next scene we see is a military commander, and he's standing in front of the American flag giving a stirring address to his troops, except the flag seems to be made of snakes, so the red and white stripes are all snakes, and the blue bit seems to have little alphabet people on it instead of stars and stripes. Anyway, the troops are required for a new mission. Are they going to allow this sexual shedding? And they all say no. And we see the troops, and they're sort of like little weird cobbler men with no faces. They remind me a little bit of Brown Smurfs. And they've all got little toolkits on their belts and hammers and things. Back in the room, Dorothy is flipping through a magazine, and she can see pictures of dancing girls in exotic headdress, like in a Vegas show. And she imagines, and then suddenly there's some African versions of the same girls dancing in a room. But Will Magnus is walking past, and he hears the noise and comes in, and she waves her hands and makes the characters vanish. And he says, "Were you talking to somebody?" She said, "No, I'm the only one here." And he says, "I need to talk to you about Cliff." And it said, "The problem with Cliff is he doesn't have a real brain. He's only got these discs, and it's causing him to break with reality. And the further he gets from having a real brain, the more he's going to become detached and lost in his memories and into flashbacks. But Dorothy's really adamant, we're going to get him a brain. We're going to transplant one or steal it." And Megan says, "You don't understand. A brain is not like a liver or a pancreas. We need a brain empty of anyone else's personality. Where are we going to find that?" And Dorothy is really resolute and said, "I don't care, just do it."
Yeah, it's that easy.
Yeah. Meanwhile, in this weird space where there's a rock cliff and the rock chief and the delegation, they start using the word nanos suddenly. And this also came up with the soldiers. So they say nanos with two N's, and Chief starts talking about nanomachines. And he says something interesting. He said, "I turned them off. Cliff came in. I turned them off." And people said, they're talking about shining and touching teeth and feet, ice that breaks open again. And we see the pig carcass falling through this white void. And then it crashes into the real world on a street. And people exclaim, and some of them have lost the use of language, so they've got the weird squiggles. And they said the pig's entrails have opened up, the ribs are broken, and inside there's trees.
Right.
Yeah. And the captain say, "Mother of cleanliness, take us now, take us home, take us backwards, take us home." And in the Doom Patrol headquarters, there's a massive noise, and Dorothy and Magnus run to see what it is. And in front of Cliff, the wall's been opened up, and the tool belt guys, who the soldier was talking to, have burst through. And they said, "Time for justice. Now enemies hide and weep. New specs for broken pieces. Dead parts lie everywhere." And they've got their tools out. And it says, "To be continued."
Hmm.
Hmm.
Mm.
So, explain it all to me, Mike.
Well, you see, what it means is, again, like the preceding issue, it's all very odd, and I can't quite explain what's going on, except it does tie back to the nanomachines, which were used in Morrison's last story, that the Chief was going to use to, you know, change the world using his chaos theories. He didn't know what was going to happen, but it was going to be, you know, this worldwide virus of the nanomachines unleashing, you know, chaos and havoc all across the world. And it looks like, despite his and Cliff's intentions to actually stop that from happening, it's still happening. Except now it's fused with Dorothy's powers, and it's gotten even weirder and worse.
Yeah.
That's my understanding as to what's happening.
Yeah, and the military commander who does the speech, he says, "Yes, we have used changes and even nanas, and some may have said that they lowered us to the level of our enemies. But let me tell you something, gentlemen, we may have used nanos, but they were our goddamn nanos." So I even Googled nanos just to see if it had any different meaning, but it just means the tiny parts of things. So if you add nano to the front of something like a nano sandwich, it becomes a really tiny sandwich.
Wow. Nano sandwiches, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. You showing a bit of nano interest in that?
No, just a bit of nano curiosity. What would be required to make a nano sandwich. Anyway, yeah, I think it's kind of like Pollack is trying, she's trying to veer off into her own territory, but she's still overshadowed by Morrison's stuff, and she's still feeding off of the stuff that happened before with the nanos and with, you know, Dorothy's maturing and how you know, her cycles affect the strength of her apparitions of the beings she can call into in out of her imagination. So it's this odd middle ground.
It is.
It's not quite fully Pollack yet, because I have to admit, Pollack's version of the Doom Patrol was literally the first ever Doom Patrol stuff I ever read back in the 90s. I had completely somehow been unaware of this Morrison dude. Apparently he was the previous writer, but somehow I missed that altogether. And I think, I can't remember what happened in the story, but there was a Vertigo Jam anthology that had very short stories from the Vertigo books at the launch of the line. Because these were the very first actual Vertigo imprint books for the Doom Patrol.
Yeah, this was 64 was the first time it was labeled Vertigo.
Yeah, yeah. So I think Vertigo had brought out this one-shot Vertigo Jam, very short stories from like their main books at the time. And I can't for the life of me recall the Doom Patrol story that was in that, but that piqued my interest. And I'm certain that was written by Pollack as well. We'll have to track that down and do an episode about that at some stage. But yeah, I went out and I picked up Doom Patrol 64, and I remember thinking, this is completely insane, but I kind of like it. And yet I had no clue as to what had come before.
So, wow.
So, it's been interesting going back and reading these now with the knowledge of what seeds Morrison had planted before Rachel came along.
Hmm. Now, one thing I did find really interesting in a new little wrinkle on some of the Grant Morrison stuff was when the delegation is talking to the Chief Rock, the Chief says, he talks about nanos and he says, nanos, no, I reject that. Nanomachines, I turned them off. Cliff came in, I turned them off. So the implication there is he turned off the nanomachines because Cliff was going to die inside the think tank.
Hmm.
Which is an interesting idea and something that's new.
Yeah, because we saw Cliff go in there and he was the one that came up with the idea and to turn them off, and he was, you know, going back into the static, and he was, you know, had that encounter with the pot plant chief.
Yeah.
With the bushes. But you're right, for Chief to turn around and say, oh, no, I turned them off. It's like, really?
Yeah.
It's like, what made you change your mind about your grand experiment, sir?
Yeah. Mm. And the pig carcass is kind of weird, but I kind of like it.
Yeah.
I don't really get it, but I like it.
Mm. That's the thing. I think Rachel may have felt that she had to live up to the weirdness of Morrison.
Mm.
And she kind of had to do that kind of bring in her own weirdness for it, which I've got to admit she does get into more in later issues of her run. There's some stuff of hers I absolutely love that I can't wait to get to. But this first story, it's a weird middle ground.
Yeah.
Her and Grant. So, yeah. And can we talk about the cover?
Can we talk about the cover in a sec? Because we have two artists at Evidence in this issue, and they are Richard Case. He does the first 16 pages, and Linda Medley does the last bunch of pages. And it's quite an interesting art change, particularly notable on Dorothy. It's
yes.
It what does it remind me? It reminds me of Al Jaffe art from Mad Magazine.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, do you see that, or is that just
a little bit? Now that you mention it, I do get what you're saying there. Yeah, and it is quite a noticeable change as well from Case. But that was an interesting way to introduce Medley's work, because she does become the regular penciler for some time.
Ah, okay.
So again, another odd crossover.
Yeah.
I can see the Jaffe influence there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this issue was called The Book of Ice, which comes back to the words appearing. So do you think that all this stuff is the nanomachines running amok?
I think it's the nanomachines running amok with the influence of Dorothy's powers and abilities.
Okay, interesting.
And they've somehow fused together and shit's hitting the fan big time.
Yeah, and the government stuff is just the government trying to fight it because it's weird. Because the government stuff is also very much like the Morrison run with the government wanting to squash all this weirdness and everything.
Yes.
Whereas I think I got kind of excited the first pages where Will Magnus was talking about the relationship between the government and superheroes and saying that, you know, they have to do things occasionally for the government. And I thought, oh, that's an interesting take. And way back in the Paul Kupperberg run, I mean, the Chief was working for the government, basically.
Yes.
Behind the scenes, away from the Doom Patrol. So, all right. So the cover, yes, it's another Tom Taggart sculpture. So it's it shows the Chief as like a fused into a wall with little letter people appearing on his head.
It's so cool.
Yeah,
it's very cool. And I just remembered as well. Even Gerard Way has touched upon the Chief's face appearing in a mountain.
Yeah.
In the Niles Caulder cutaway scenes in his run.
Yeah. So
this, this is
the balloon rising up past one.
Yes, that's right. So this is the genesis of that kind of idea. I'm thinking. So it's nice to see the first appearance of Niles the Mountain, I guess.
Yeah, the stuff that Cliff's saying, some of it I can remember where it's from. Like he's talking at one point about it's the government, which seems to be when they're clashing over the magic bus and that.
Mm-hmm.
And some of his other dialogue, I think, comes out of the invasion where there was an ongoing gag where whenever the news reporters stuck a camera in someone's face, they always said, "Get that goddamn camera out of my face."
Actually, I think I recall that line from the magic bus as well.
Right.
I'm sure there's we'll have to do some homework and go back and trace where his the original lines came from, because I remember reading this even back when this issue first came out, that I was like, okay, they're telling me he's like stuck in a loop and he's just repeating stuff that's happened before. Now, having read all of the preceding run, at this point it's now like, okay, now I want to go back and see which moments he's replaying in his mind.
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting bit of homework for us.
Yes. All righty. So I'm intrigued. I'm a little confused.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the caption boxes, after reading about 10 of them and not really understanding them, I stopped trying to focus on what they were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you ever find... Because I found that very reminiscent of Morrison as well. Sometimes there would be call-out boxes and they would, to me, they would just be gibberish, and I would find the same sort of thing that would kind of be like, okay, that's just more random garbage.
Yeah, I think the main difference is there's a lack of labelling of things. So, we get told that, this is the Book of Ice coming into the world, but, we don't get the name of the delegation. We don't get any of the names of, the five individuals in the delegation. We get told this other place is the Alterations, but, the implication is it's inside the chief's mind, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
But I just found there wasn't, things weren't designated clearly, which Morrison tended to do.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway, yeah, I'm in for more.
Yeah, I do like the line you said just before. You're intrigued but confused. I think a lot of people felt that way about Rachel Pollack's run.
Yeah,
there's some stuff she gets into later on in the series, and it's just really out there.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I'm glad we got to this start of her stuff. It's good to finally get there.
Hmm. No, I do wonder if some of the the horribleness that Dorothy encounters is from personal experience for Rachel.
Possibly, because for those who don't know, Rachel Pollack is actually a transgender woman. So she quite possibly went through a lot of gossiping about her as a person, in her own life, because she was different and, what was she doing sort of thing, which is a sort of thing that Dorothy, the character, has had to put up with. And you're right, it's quite... evident in this book that she's treated horribly by by Joe Average on the street. So that's an interesting question as to whether Rachel dealt with that in her own life.
And Dorothy becomes a good character to make a focal point for that, because, you can see, the natural prejudice that she would encounter there.
Yeah, but I like it. It's this run, whilst not the most popular run, I have a soft spot for it because it's literally the first Patrol run I ever picked up, and I like where it goes. So I'm keen to see what you and others think as we get along there, because Rachel takes us to some interesting places.
Yeah.
All right, I think we've doomsplained that pretty well.
I think we have.
Cool. Okay, so it's time to open up into the mailbag of doom once again. And this time we have asked you, dear listener, which fictional character would you add to the Doom Patrol roster? And first off, we heard from Big Tim Styles, who's at Big Tim Styles on the Twitters, and he said, seeing as my webcomic Gorilla My Dreams is crazy inspired by Doom Patrol, get Knockaround Guy on the team.
That's his gorilla lead, yes.
Right. His less self-serving answer is Hellboy, the Goon, and Frankie or Cal McDonald.
The Hellboy on the Doom Patrol would be really interesting.
That'd be cool, yeah.
Yeah. We heard from Astrakis One, who's Rich Mean Vittle Week still. And he said, I hope you have this guy in Australia. And I picture a grimace, which always makes me laugh.
Yeah, I've never understood what grimace is meant to represent in terms of the whole McDonald's fantasy world they've concocted. Is that how McDonald's sees their customers?
I don't know. But he makes me laugh every time I see him.
But yes, Grimace on the Doom Patrol. That's inspired, Kevin. We then heard from Steve Lacey at Quiz Lacey, and he said, The Thing, Robot Man and The Thing hanging out. It writes itself.
That's Steve. Cool. Steve from the Fantastic Cast, so he's got a real... He knows his thing.
He does.
We heard from Karthik Karkarella, who gave us two answers, and he said, Judge Dredd. Interesting. I don't know if it works, but interesting. And he also said Legion is the crazy guy on TV now in that new show. Yeah. Which, he's crazy.
He's similar to Crazy Jane.
Yeah.
Different. I think he had different personalities and different powers to go with them.
Hmm.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We heard from Frack to the Future, aka at Fractures on the Twitters. He said, Delirium of the Endless. She would be a good fit for the team. I agree.
Yep.
That would be an awesome fit. Yeah.
Another fairly out of it lady.
Yeah.
We heard from Martin Gray, who said, Herman Melville's Bartleby the Scrivener. Quick, Bartleby, stop the brain. I prefer not to.
Right.
Scrivener, that's one who sculpts whalebone, isn't it?
Let's say yes.
Yes.
Sure. We heard from Jay Bandoy at W Bandoy, and he said Doctor Doom, because of obvious reason. Does quick Google search. Wait, they battled before? Has this been addressed in an episode before? And Jay provided us images from the Super Team Family Presents comics, which I'm sure are just fan art.
They are. There's a guy who does mashups.
Yes.
Doug knows about him. Doug, put in a link on your site.
Yeah.
Please.
Please. So, yes, there were two issues of this apparent Super Team Family Presents comic, which showed Dr. Doom conquering the Doom Patrol in both issues. And it's some cool artwork there. Yeah.
Is that the... I think one of them might be the cover with the jukebox attacking the Doom Patrol.
I believe it is, where they're running away from it. Yeah.
Reedy-doo, reedy-doo.
Ah, that infernal noise.
We heard from Ryan Daly, who does lots of podcasts, and he said, Batman. And then he went, okay, for real, Pinocchio.
I would like to see Bats and the team.
I don't think of many Batman Doom Patrol interactions.
I can recall one, and I'm sure it was in the JLA story about the where they had the villain Crucifer, who was the vampire leader. And I think the patrol were trying to sort of... I'm sure there was a scene where Batman basically told Robot Man to get out of his city.
Right.
And Bats drove off. I'm sure it was in that story.
Okay, that's the John Byrne stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can't wait to get to that. Oh, look, we heard from Rifty at Rift1821 on the Twitters. And he said, Banana Man has the right amount of crazy... But for reals, Monkey from Monkey Magic.
Magic.
Monkey would be cool.
Yeah. I was like, Sandy. Sandy was my favorite.
Pig's eye.
Robot Man. Anyway. we heard from Jonathan Dick at Real Last Name on Twitter, and he said, Metamorpho. Why not?
Why not?
He's been in some Doom Patrol comics.
Yeah, and again, in the Burn stuff as well.
Yeah.
Richie O'Hara Beeman at Rickety OB said, I think the Log Lady would fit nicely with the gang. The Log Lady from Twin Peaks?
Twin Peaks reference.
Yeah.
Okay.
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 Sure. Maybe she would
bring a lot. This doesn't bring a lot to the team.
Maybe the log would warn them of impending doom.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. We hear from Doug Savisa, buddy, Dougie.
Dougie.
And he said, the Thing and Metamorpho are great choices. I'd also push Frankenstein from SHADE, the acronym SHADE, forward. And Marvel's Armadillo. I think I'd prefer my Armadillo of those. He's a guy who looks like an armadillo. He's a bit of a sad sack.
Right. Although I do think Frankenstein and the SHADE teaming would be an interesting pair up. Yeah. Coffee and Comics at Coffee and Comics blog. Hello, Clinton. He said, Alan Moore, he's imaginary, right? If not, then maybe Blinky Bill. They need an anthropomorphic koala.
Right. Need to punch an anthropomorphic koala.
Yeah.
Talking Superman took a break from Talking Superman to say Dial H.
Now that would be interesting.
That would be interesting. The hero dial dude.
Yeah.
Does he mean Robbie, the classic one, or?
I'd
say yes.
Well, it could be either or. Did you read the New 52?
I did. I love that run.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
The China Meevil stuff.
Yeah, was very cool.
Very cool.
And then Christopher Hayden at HaydenC89 said Bizarro.
Hello, Christopher.
Hello, Christopher. Thank you for joining us. I think that would be a cool meeting.
Bizarro would be funny.
Yeah.
That Heath Corson Bizarro miniseries was awesome. Very fun. Yes.
Cool.
We have from Dean Jones on Facebook, and he said, temporarily Loma Shade. Who's Loma Shade, Mike?
I don't know.
Google. By the scrying powers of Google, I will know the answer. Loma Shade. Loma Shade. I did Lomo Shade. It's Loma. This is magic. Prime Earth. It's Shade from Shade the Changing Girl.
Right. There you go. I'm surprised we both missed that, but anyway.
Yeah, I guess which young animal I'm not red. Anyway, ongoing, maybe Squirrel Girl. I'd like to see Cliff having to deal with Squirrel Girl. Yeah, that'd be fun.
That would be hilarious.
Yeah.
Cliff would get so frustrated by Squirrel Girl. And speaking of Cliff, we heard on Facebook from Cliff Steele himself, apparently. Ooh. And Cliff said, Ragman, why aren't they doing anything with Ragman? I'd take Lobo too.
Ragman. Yeah, my wife was watching Arrow the other day with me. She doesn't usually watch Arrow. She's going, who's that? And I said, that's Ragman. She's going, really? Ragman? Yep.
Yep. Guess what, Mrs. Hicks? It's comics. Lobo would be interesting, but I think maybe just for one issue.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
I want him to run away because it's too weird.
Yeah.
We had from Jared Driscoll, and he said Plastic Man, but only the Jack Cole version. So classic Plastic Man, classic Flaz.
Okay.
Hmm.
And then we also got an email from Dr. Ange to his friends, and he said, just wanted to thank you guys for the great work you do on the show and for covering the Morrison run the way you did. As you said, the book seemed to lose its way in the middle, only to end on a tremendous high point. It would have been easy for Morrison to end the run with a team shot of everyone hugging and laughing, really, or even an iconic group shot with some tagline. Instead, we get these nuanced two last issues, a true fitting goodbye for this run. The characters in the book would never be the same, so this deserved a true finale. I think the whole point of issue 62 was to let us have this upbeat goodbye for these members. Rebus living on Dane of the World and Dorothy floating away on a balloon both make me think that they ended up happily ever after. And Cliff returning to the sanitarium provided the bookend piece necessary. He was the rock and he always will be. And that's why I love Cliff. He's awesome. But issue 63 was just heart-wrenching. The idea that Earth is hell has been played out in other media, most vividly in the Twilight Zone. But seeing Jane have her light snuffed out medically to live a normal life was depressing. How many of us have the wake, work, sleep, repeat cycles in our lives without the fantastic? How many of us turn to these characters for a brief reprieve from the doldrums? But that ending with Jane being welcomed back by Cliff was just brilliant. I got chills when I read the book the first time. I get chills every time I read it now. I got chills hearing Mike discuss it. It was just the most elegant, poetic end for the run possible.
He's got chills. They're multiplying.
I'll take that as a compliment. I have to admit, the Pollack stuff coming up never worked for me, probably because it had the impossible task of following Morrison. I look forward to hearing your thoughts on it. Lastly, for the question of the week, I vote for Palmer Eldritch to be the new Doom Patrol member. Crashed astronaut from Pluto who uses the drug Chu-Z to enter a dream world he controls. And once you take Chu-Z, he can control your world, your thoughts. Those in his snare sport the three stigmata of Palmer Eldritch, hence the title of the Philip K. Dick novel. Anyway, thanks for the show, gents. You guys are the best. Thanks, Ange.
Oh, thanks, awesome. Ange.
Yeah, that was a good episode, that last one.
Yeah.
It was a big finale for Morrison stuff. But yeah. Anyway, Paul, which fictional character would you want to see on the patrol?
I would like to see Gumby.
Okay, right.
Yeah, uh-huh. I think he could add to the dynamic. He's a very upbeat personality.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, he does have a lot of weirdness associated with him.
Yes. Yes. Yes, he does, that Gumby.
And I wouldn't be opposed to his Pony Pal Pokey too.
Right. And they could, you know, more than likely face up against the Blockheads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And other nano threats.
Yes. Nano Blockheads everywhere. as for me, I would want to see someone from the DC universe and someone like Rick Flagg or Amanda Waller.
Oh.
Or maybe both of them. Sort of that real, you know, tough, hard-edged aspect of the DCU where, you know, they're all that sort of military tactical stuff and how they're going to save the world and they're going to do it their way. And then you'd have all the weirdos and the Doom Patrol sort of saying, no, it's fine. We'll do it our way. And trying to see someone like Waller or Flagg cope with the insanity of the team and still try and get the mission done. I would find that sort of conflicting dynamics quite interesting. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. So there we go.
That would be interesting. It would be different.
It would be. Yeah.
Sweet.
Cool.
Anyway, I think that might bring us to the end of our show. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, next week on the show, all things going well, we'll be talking about Doom Patrol Volume 6 again. Hooray! Issue number 5.
Finally.
Finally. Mm. Yeah. And next week, our question of the week will be, what is your favorite vehicle in all of fiction?
Ooh.
Ooh.
Mm. Interesting. Okay.
Interesting. Yeah. So if you would like to send us your answers to the question of the week, you can, or just talk to us in general, you can get in touch with us on Twitter. You can talk to Wilfred at WFDpod. You can send us emails at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. Get in touch on the Facebook page or visit Doug's site, mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. Read his fantastic posts and leave a comment there. How does that sound?
Sounds fair enough. Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. And I think that's it for now.
That's it. Yep. Thanks, Paul.
It's been a nano amount of fun.
Really? Yeah. All right. Let's get out of here. Thanks, guys. Catch you all again next week for more Waiting for Doom.
Bye.
Oh, man, Pollack, woohoo. Oh, dearie me.
Yeah, Pollack, I don't know what's going on. And I've read the first four and I still don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I won't be mean. Anyway.
You'll try not to be mean.
I'll try not to be mean.
Okay. Good luck to us all.
Okay. You ready to go?
Yeah. Look, at least it's not burn.
I must confess that I did not finish my synopsis, but I got like 2/3 of the way through.
Oh, my God. And it's a Pollack issue. Oh, man, you're in so much trouble.
I know. Well, yeah.